and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, as we promised, a weekly now episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Luke, how you been?
I'm doing well, man. The weather is starting to feel like fall. Normally we start football in what feels like summer. I mean, well, it actually is summer, but we actually start playing games and it still kind of feels like summer. And here we are transitioning to fall. This would be Ryan Burns' favorite season of the year because of deer.
Of just deer. Yeah. Gosh. Have you ever heard of cellular trail cameras before?
I'm vaguely familiar. Yes, I may have actually bid a project that included one at one point in my life.
But you cannot confirm nor deny that because of that beautiful NDA that you probably signed.
Sure.
So I've got, truth be told, I guess I'll just air my dirty laundry now. If you had to guess how many just trail cameras I have in general, like how many I have out in the woods right now, how many would you guess?
I'd guess less than 10, but more than 5. So I'm going to go 6.
I have 21.
What?
It's an issue. It's a lot.
Are you like trying to make TikTok videos with a deer?
No, I have FOMO. And for those of you who don't know what FOMO is, I have fear of missing out. And for someone who doesn't get as much time in the woods as they would like, because their primary job happens to cover a fall sport and it takes up a lot of your time. When you do check the trail cameras and you're trying to make the best deductions of where you are going to sit when you do get time out there, it helps to have a lot of information. And so that's where I like to have an MRI, which in this instance would be most recent information as far as what I'm talking about with deer. So I have some cellular trail cameras in the woods. And so all they are is they take a picture and they send a picture to you on your phone, like in real time, pretty much. And so I've got a shooter buck out there. My better half, Liz, just named him Galileo tonight.
Really?
Yeah, because he's always looking up at the stars when, truthfully, he's working a scrape most of the time that she sees. And I know you don't know what a scrape is, but.
Please, I believe that is when, I'm not sure, but I was going to say, like, he takes his horns and he puts them against a tree and goes up and down.
Oh, you were so close. That's a rub.
That's a rub.
A rub. Yep. God. So he's rubbing a tree there. A scrape is when it's like a branch is like, say, 4 feet off the ground. He will put his face and glands and forehead up into the branches and his horns and put them up there. If you think of like your son throwing a temper tantrum, Luke, and he's like pawing it, he's just like moving his arms and legs around. It's kind of what the deer does in terms of he's scraping at the ground, putting some scent there and whatnot.
Do you have a trail cam in my house? Because he just recently started doing this.
No, but I did see my nephew who is 2. And I think once your son gets there here very soon, it's the terrible 2s are a thing. I'm not even a pop.
Shoot.
But this shooter has showed up 2 nights in a row just after shooting light ends. So trying to play the game of when do I want to try to get in there and try to potentially get an arrow through them. And see, it's really a cost. It's like weighing the pros and cons at any point, because yeah, you want to get in there and potentially harvest them. Because for me anyway, this would definitely be one that I'd want to put on the wall. He's a pretty big deer. But you also don't want to booger it up because the rut's not going to be here for another month. So if you have any advice for me in the deer hunting world, I think you know how to find me on the Twitter machine and my DMs are open at Ryan Burns MN. But it's some internal struggles tonight, especially because as I told Luke in the pre-production meeting, I'm going to be heading up to Lake Winnie. Up in Deer River, Minnesota here for a 48-hour shot to do some walleye fishing. And as I told Luke in the pre-production meeting as well, the forecast for my trip up there is looking like low to mid-40s with a north wind. So I am going to bring my Elmer Fudd hat, my toe warmers, and remind myself that I'm willingly doing this, trying to get some of that precious, precious white gold that is walleye fillets.
I think anybody that has followed Gopher Illustrated in the last 5-ish years that we've been doing this podcast, all they know when you go fishing or you go on any kind of vacation, what that means is you put money on the fact that the Gophers will be getting commitment this weekend to ruin Ryan's vacation plans. So all those people start up the threads on Gopher Illustrated, start guessing who that commit is going to be, because we have basically signed, sealed, and delivered that commitment here, right here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast.
Yeah, who knows? Well, you know, Jacob Schuster, as we kind of teased at the last podcast, for you people who don't want to get behind the paywall, but yet, and Luke, I'm sure you know this, I'm sure many of our listeners know this, it is $1 to get behind the paywall for a month. It is legitimately 100 pennies. It is 10 dimes. It is 20 nickels, 4 quarters. And you would have known all about Jacob Schuster, the 4-star defensive tackle that Minnesota had on campus this past weekend. And he's supposed to be making a decision here in the coming weeks. And it's never the worst thing to have a kid on campus and you be the last visit. So it's a little bit of a different visit, considering the staff couldn't really show him around. In fact, right, they couldn't show him around at all because of this whole COVID dead period thing. But, you know, hoping to get some more tidbits up for our GI members. I know that they've been very antsy. I've given you all I know so far. But, I think that's about going to be the only promo for this episode is $1.
$1.
And you're like 27 days from the season, folks. If you've been waiting, your subscription's going to go through the first game of the season anyway. So might as well pull the trigger now.
All right, let's get into some Gopher football talk, because I know that you are you're basically previewing what is going to be your new venture, which is an outdoors podcast. You're trialing here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast.
I'm sure people are going to be very well. I'm hoping that in a couple of weeks here, maybe as we get closer to the Michigan game, I get to spend the first 15 minutes of one of these episodes telling my telling my deer story, because we're gonna on the ground.
We're literally going to make that a separate episode, actually. So
nope. People are going to, if you don't like it, that's fine. I don't care. We're just going to get into it.
All right.
You come for the Gopher football, you stay for me complaining about what I do with deer hunting.
Okay, so let's talk Bateman. I think that's probably first and foremost on most people's minds. Just to recap the story, if you've basically been living under a rock lately, he opted out somewhere in the August timeframe. He has tried to opt back in, but he did, during that period of opting out, sign with an agent. He is interested in playing football now that the Big Ten has brokered basically new testing procedures, basically new policies that is going to make it possible for Big Ten football to happen. I hope that Ryan can give us some news. I don't know. I haven't seen anything publicly. So, Ryan, what do you have? You got an inside scoop that you haven't yet posted anywhere?
I appreciate the people of Gopher Illustrated asking me daily. I appreciate the many members of Gopher Twitter hitting me up and asking for news. Folks, I promise you, if and when anything happens, first of all, Gopher Illustrated members are going to be the first to know, and then you beautiful people of the Twitter machine or social media in general will also get the news after that. But there is no news. There is nothing really going on besides Bateman's at practice. He's practicing. He's healthy. He's with the team. And no one at the Gopher Football Complex really knows when they're going to know anything. Because, Luke, do you know what the body of, government here would be that we have to go through yet? And they're not exactly known for making quick decisions in this aspect.
I believe that's compliance, but I quit following them on Twitter. They were kind of a boring follow.
Okay, what was the 4 letters before the compliance? NCAA.
Oh, I thought you meant at the university. You mean even higher up. Oof, yuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Minnesota's asking their compliance, hey, can Rashad play? Because I'm pretty sure everyone here would say that's probably an easy conversation to have, but it's the NCAA we're still dealing with here now. The only thing really of note since we last spoke a week ago would be, I believe news came out today that Michigan and Ohio State's opt-outs in Jalen Mayfield, Wyatt Davis, and Sean Wade, I believe at least 2 of the 3 had hired agents, as Rashad had, if not all 3. And they have allegedly received good news, because Ohio State head coach Ryan Day on a radio spot said that Wyatt Davis and Sean Wade, the two Buckeye players that opted out and then opted back in, are good to go. And then Jalen Mayfield, the Michigan offensive tackle, also tweeted over the weekend, some good news. And I believe Sam Webb of our Michigan 24/7 site also kind of confirmed that. So maybe it comes soon. Maybe it doesn't. Ohio State and Michigan are helmet schools and they get preferential treatment from the NCAA. And if you try to tell me they don't in Minnesota compared to Minnesota, you're lying to yourself, because Minnesota is still Minnesota in their eyes. And we're just going to have to continue to play this waiting game. Now, like I said last episode, there is still optimism there that Rashad is going to be ruled eligible and you'll get to see him for one more fall season. But we still don't know anything than we did last week. And hopefully by the time we record for next week's episode previewing the defense, maybe there's some good news then. But the longer this goes on, it's tough to really say which way it's going to go. But as I mentioned, there is optimism.
All right. Normally we would try to like save quarterback for the end, but I feel like let's avoid that this year. Mostly because for the first time in a long time, we know who QB1 is, and actually he's quite good, Ryan. I think last season proved that. So let's talk a little QB, because I think what most people are probably wondering is, what do we got after Tanner?
Well, I don't want to get past QB1.
I do, but I understand. I'm not trying to belabor that or get past the headline that we have a really good quarterback. What I'm just trying to say is, I think the uncertainty is behind him.
Yeah. Yes. And that's where do we all hope that Tanner Morgan duplicates, if not improves upon his 2019 season? Certainly. But I mean, we are talking about, especially for the length of, or the duration of this podcast history, what Tanner Morgan did last year was incredible, considering how low Gopher quarterback standards have been for essentially my 28 years on this earth. You look at some of his accolades from last season, if you want a refresher course, he set the single season passing yards record with 3,253, single season touchdown passing record with 30 last year in 13 games, single season completion percentage with 66%, yards per game through the air with 250, the best touchdown to interception ratio with 30 touchdowns and only 7 interceptions, and the best single season pass efficiency rating for a Gopher quarterback with 178.7, all telling you what you already knew, that Tanner Morgan was very, very special last year. Now, from all indications I've heard throughout the entire offseason, there's nothing that makes me believe that Tanner won't at least duplicate what he did last season. Now, he's going to have to prove that he can do it without one NFL receiver. I'm hoping it's not two NFL receivers, because we'll get to that wide receiver room here in a few minutes, but Tanner is going to be QB1. And then it's going to be what's after him. Now, it's tough to really like give tidbits from practice or this fall camp, because they haven't even been able to allowed to go full pads yet, which I don't know if they're waiting from clearance from the Big Ten. It must be the Big Ten that they're waiting for clearance from in terms of when they're going to be able to go full pads, because we're less than 4 weeks away from the first game and they haven't been able to hit each other. I mean, they got one day of full pads in the spring. So you have one day of full pads in 10 months so far. They need to start hitting each other. But the odds on favorite to be QB2 is Zach Gainax. And I would pretty much argue that as far as QB2s go, I mean, Anixed's about as good as it's going to get, or as it's been for Gopher football QB2s in some time. Now, I think he's the best in Strebler, but obviously Jim Zabrowski and Jerry Kill didn't really know how to use Strebler. And he ends up transferring to South Dakota, setting tons of records out there through the air, ends up going to the CFL, winning a championship, and now he's on an NFL roster and on the 53 of the Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
So Jerry Kill can't figure out what to do with him, and he tries to move him to receiver, and now he's a third-string quarterback in the NFL. It just essentially sums up the Jerry Kill quarterback era for me anyway, but I think it's going to be Anixed, but I think the more interesting point to kind of look at with quarterback is, with this extra year of eligibility, what happens? Because everybody stays the same eligibility wise. And so that means Tanner stays the same. So Tanner has the opportunity to, you know, I guess potentially stay an additional 2 years after this and really break every single passing record known to man in a Gopher uniform. But if he does that, if you're Jacob Clark or Cole Kramer, you know, what, I mean, you don't want to be sitting here being QB3 for too long, especially because you have a four-star coming in, eighth in Cali Akmanis, who's going to be coming in next summer. So it's going to be interesting for me because this additional year of eligibility, essentially freezing everybody's eligibility for this fall, is great. But for one of the most transferred positions in college football, which is college quarterback, I don't know what to kind of expect here. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where there's five scholarship quarterbacks at this time next year. Yeah. It doesn't happen in today's modern day college football. I'm not going to be one to speculate who's going to leave and what's that going to entail, but it's going to be an interesting kind of side plot to kind of sink your teeth into here over the next 12 months. If you're looking for negativity,
what do you think though? Like in all reality, I know this is what the NCAA has said. And every time I hear somebody say like this year doesn't count towards eligibility, right? Like what are the odds they reverse course on that? Because basically,
there's no way.
I mean, I don't know, man. Well,
okay, what would be the argument for doing that?
Money.
Okay, give me more than that.
No,
what
like
do you mean money.
Money. So like they're gonna bring in a full slate of players, right? There's probably not gonna be that many like a full slate of scholarships. So they're gonna have to expand scholarships, right? You're already losing revenue money at many of these schools due to attendance and other reasons. They're already trying to make the economics work out of supporting all the existing athletics or existing teams and sports. I mean, they've effectively are going to play football now where it looked like they maybe weren't going to, but I don't know, man. I just wonder what if they get through this and more or less everybody plays a semblance of a season and, you know, not just football, but other sports too. And they're like, you know what? Not so much, guys.
Well, I guess my counterpoint would be they're not going to do that.
that's not really a counterpoint. That's just like, I'm trying to play devil's advocate. Here,
I know. But it's also like, just because everyone gets an extra year of eligibility, like you look at these seniors, I mean, I'm not expecting all these upperclassmen back next year. Like, I think some are going to move on with their lives and get into their careers that are away from football. And, you know, they know that they have the opportunity to come back. I just don't expect them all to do so. And so then, I mean, yes, you don't have as many scholarships, and obviously scholarships cost money, but, you know, just kind of getting back to quarterback. I feel good about Gopher quarterbacks this fall. It's tough not to with what Tanner Morgan did last fall. He's got a lot of players back on his offensive line. We'll have to see how he can try to duplicate, if not improve, without one NFL receiver, hopefully not two. But I think, he's been putting in a lot of work over the offseason, trying to make sure that this team continues on the trajectory that everyone saw them ended on with such high hopes in 2019.
All right, let's talk a little bit of running back. This is a position group that, for lack of a better term, has kind of been decimated in losing Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, but they do have some stability coming back in Mo Ibrahim. I pronounce that terribly all the time. I've gotten better over the years, but yeah, all the time, terrible. But he by far is going to be the feature back, and has had a ton of success in this offense previously, but this was a Kirk Schrock offense, so it's going to be a little bit different. I'm excited to see Mo be the feature back. He's basically overcome every expectation I had. You trashed him forever, so.
Oh, stop.
I'm just kidding. You got so much heat for that. All warranted, of course.
You're the worst. Mo's back. Mo is a very good running back, and it's going to look a lot different back there. And that's a little nerve wracking for me because without Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, and I think Rodney Smith may go down as one of the least appreciated players in some time, just what he did over the course of his Gopher career and how valuable he was. Because without Rodney and Shannon coming back, you're losing 66% of your running back carries from last year. Now, that means that instead of Mo's going to double his touches from last year, essentially. Mo probably got between 8 and 10 on a given week. Some weeks he would get 3 or 4 if Rodney and Shannon were healthy. Some weeks he would get near 20 if they weren't. So if all things hold true, you're probably looking at Mo somewhere around 20 touches a game. That's where Minnesota wants to get him there. Maybe it's 17, 18 carries. Maybe he's getting 2 targets a game out of the backfield. We'll see if Minnesota decides to throw to their running backs with Mike Sanford now in his offensive coordinator with Matt Simon. But I think, what is it going to look like after him? Because you're still looking at 10 to 15 touches to running backs. Because say on any given game, say the offense runs 60, 65 plays. Well, if you split it in half, which say 30, 35. So you got Tanner throwing the ball 30 times. You're running the ball 35. Mo's going to take 20 of it. And you're going to have to give 15 to somebody else. So who's it going to be? And that's where you have a cornucopia of options, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You have the redshirt freshman Cam Wiley, who folks saw against Georgia Southern. Someone that Minnesota really, really liked out of high school. He was a Nike Spark freak, a.k.a. he's got incredible athletic testing numbers for his size. But that's the thing is, Cam Wiley is a big running back. And by big, I mean tall. 6'1", 6'2". So in his second year now in a Gopher uniform, is he going to be able to keep his pad level low so he can navigate through those holes cleaner so that he doesn't get stood up and then he loses yards? Because I think that's one of Mo's best assets as a running back. Because when was the last time you saw Mo Ibrahim take a carry and not get positive yardage or not fall forward? He always does an elite job of falling forward. And that's because half of it, or some of it, I should say, is I think because of his stature and because he's not the tallest guy in the world. And but I'm getting off track here. So can Cam Wiley show in year two that he can keep his pad level low? We need to see more, a bigger sample size to see what his vision is like. And we'll talk about vision with our next guy as well. But there's no denying he is a very good athlete. But we need to see more because he's probably in line to get some touches this fall off the bat. But he needs to prove that he can be productive with those touches, because if he's not, I think Bryce Williams is a guy that's also going to get a shot. Bryce Williams redshirted last fall. You best remember Bryce for his 2 touchdown performance in Camp Randall in 2018, where Minnesota was able to get the axe. He has a 2 touchdown game there. And then he kind of just, I shouldn't say disappeared last fall, but Minnesota redshirted him as they had some other options there with Rodney, Shannon, and Mo. And my thing with Bryce is this, and it's the same story I've been telling and for over a year now. And it's something that I'm going to be very curious to ask Kenny Burns about tomorrow, because I'm fortunate enough to be able to get an interview with running backs coach Kenny Burns.
Oh, good for you.
I've been asking for assistant coaching interviews for almost 10 months now, and I'm just starting to get them now. Don't even get me started.
Oh, sorry.
Don't even get me started. But how do you teach a running back vision in terms of and that's something that I asked Mo Ibrahim when we had him last week as a media conglomerate on Zoom. Was, you know, I told Mo, like, one of your best features to me is your vision. And how do you go about teaching other running backs about how do you improve someone's vision as a running back? And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about in terms of vision, is especially as a running back, it's not where the hole currently is when you get the handoff. It's where it's going to be when you hit the line, or where it's going to be once you hit the second level. It's all those different things where you just can't, if Minnesota's running inside zone right, yeah, you're probably going to stick to the A or the B gap, AKA one side of the guard or the other side of the guard. But if it's not there, why isn't it there? And because if it's not there, that means it's there somewhere else. And that's where Mo just kind of talked about eye placement and knowing where your eyes should be on this play versus that play versus, and how different defensive fronts play into it. And if you want to read Mo's full quotes, they're up on Gopher Illustrated for free, which I'm sure they're somewhere on the front page. So it's something with Bryce Williams where I could make the argument, that, you know, my sources on the Gopher football team would tell you he's the best athlete in the running back room, if not on the entire offense. And straight line speed wise, you're not going to catch Bryce Williams. But it's proving in year three now for Bryce, can he figure out how to improve his vision? Because, you know, you go back and you watch the Georgia Southern game, and there were holes there that Minnesota was opening, and it was almost like Bryce was just putting his head down and running into the back of the offensive lineman. Whereas earlier in the game, when Rodney and Shannon and Mo were in, they were hitting those and the Minnesota was gaining yards. And that's where, if he can just improve his vision and the game slows down for him in year three, that's where you can really see Bryce can complement Mo well. Because if it's not either Cam or Bryce, you still have some young freshmen there in Jason Williamson, the two-time Gatorade player of the year in the state of Minnesota from Owatonna, broke all kinds of records down there. He should be ready to go. I think it's like 18 months now off that ACL tear he had as a true freshman in the spring. Is he 100%? We're going to have to find out. And you know, I think if he is, he can help you somewhere on offense. Speaking of another guy who can help you somewhere on offense, you have a redshirt freshman by the name of Trayson Potts, a guy who scored a touchdown against Maryland last year. I'm going to be very intrigued to see what Mike Sanford does with him, because from the early whispers I've received from practice here so far this fall, Trayson Potts has been used in a plethora of different ways as a returner, as a running back, in jet sweeps, in bubble screens, in middle screens, and maybe a little flexed out wide a little bit. Minnesota knows that Trey is probably their best side-to-side elusive guy, whereas Mo is their best north-south guy, and they want to get Potts the ball in space and see what he can do. So that's kind of a little tidbit for you to kind of chew on here as we get closer to the season. And then also get down to Kai Thomas, the four-star true freshman from Kansas. I mean, is he ready for his shot, or is it going to take a little bit of time? And that's where I've heard, you know, when the pads have come on and Minnesota's been able to hit, that's where Kai Thomas is really shining. And ultimately, that's really, it's in the game of football when it matters, is the underwear Olympics are great with just helmets or not with helmets, because you're ultimately going to be playing the game in full pads. And that's where Kai has really shined. And that's where you saw him in, as a high schooler, would be really, really productive. So Mo's going to be the guy for 20 touches a game, because I don't want to overload him. You want him healthy for that stretch run in late November and December. So if you give him 20 touches, there's still 10 to 15 to go elsewhere. And from what I've heard, I don't think Kenny Burns has really set in stone on anything, but that's where I'm going to be very intrigued to ask him about that tomorrow.
All right, let's move to the wide receiver room. We already touched on Bateman a little bit. Obviously, you mentioned that if Bateman's back, this is a totally different room and the expectations are totally different. If he isn't back, this obviously becomes a fairly big question mark. We know what he is. He's, you know, arguably the reigning, not arguably, I think he did win Big Ten Receiver of the Year.
Correct.
So, you know, that's a big thing if they're able to get him back and figure out the whole eligibility piece. But, you know, we thought for a while that this was going to be Chris Mottman Bell's coming out party. But, you know, what should we expect from he and the rest of this wide receiver room?
I think I voiced my concerns about the wide receiver room at some point on this podcast. But if Bateman is back, the room's obviously very good, because you have, as I said last week, I think the best potentially athlete to wear a Gopher uniform in my lifetime. I think he's the best Gopher receiver maybe ever. And if he's back, your room immediately goes from unproven and potentially average to above average to you're going to be really good. Because what Rashad does is so important in this offense, and he is the X receiver. For those of you who don't know, essentially what the X receiver essentially does in an offense is he's the guy that's going to take the top off the defense. He's the guy who's going to dictate the safety coverage. He's the guy that, especially if Rashad is ruled eligible, the number one thing on every defensive coordinator's game plan against Minnesota's offense is going to start with stop Rashad Bateman. I mean, he's just that good. And his speed is something that Minnesota really doesn't have ready to go right now. I mean, Chris Ottman-Bell's not a burner. Seth Green's not a burner. Clay Gary, Doug Emlyn, Daniel Jackson aren't there yet. And you don't really have a guy that can really take the top off. That's where Harry Van Dyne, the guy who caught a long sideline pass against Maryland, he transferred out to Indiana State to seek additional playing opportunities. Can't blame him. But he was really kind of the only other X receiver that Minnesota had on the roster. And that's where, if Bateman's back, I think that speed is so essential for what Minnesota's trying to accomplish here. So if Bateman's back, sweet. If it's not, and it's very questionable. And I know that I know that's not a popular opinion, and that's okay. But it's something I was fortunate enough to ask Matt Simon about last week when I got him on the phone for 10, 15, 20 minutes. And that's where he even said, I mean, if the wide receiver coach is actually saying this verbatim, and you're going to be able to read that on Gopher Illustrated Wednesday, Thursday, that, you know, the guys are coming in and they know, like, what have we proven if we don't have Rashad? Like, Chris Ottman-Bell, you had 5 touchdowns last year. Great. Prove it. Do it again. Seth Green, you haven't had a lot of opportunities. Okay, well, you're going to have to prove yourself. Clay Gary, you haven't had your opportunities. You got to prove it. Doug Emlyn, Daniel Jackson, you haven't played a snap of college football. And that's where there's so much uncertainty at that position. And do I think there is talent there? Yeah. But if you don't have Bateman there, that talent is going to be significantly challenged. And I just don't know that it's going to be ready to go. So do I think Chris Ottman-Bell can handle a bigger workload? Yes. Is he going to have a bigger workload? Yes. I mean, we talked about it last week because Chris is going to see now 7-8 targets a game, probably, instead of 3-4 on any given week that we're guaranteed. Is he ready for a bigger limelight? And then what is it? Because if it's Bateman and Chris, I mean, I've heard early indications of practices, Seth Green is the one right now as the wide receiver 3 in this offense. So you would have Bateman outside, you'd have Green outside, you'd have Ottman-Bell in the slot. I mean, that's promising to me, but that's where it makes you wonder, because Seth Green's skill set is a big physical receiver outside that can go up and win 50-50 balls. Well, isn't that exactly what Brevin Spann-Ford is supposed to do? And you can have, like, you can have one guy outside do that, and I guess you flex Brevin out into the slot, and you go, you know, you do 2 receivers on one side, 2 receivers on the other side. So you have, say, Bateman and Spann-Ford, then you have Ottman-Bell and Green. Okay. I mean, you can do that. It's just, it's an interesting kind of skill set. I mean, I'd be here for Seth Green actually becoming a wide receiver in year 5. And he's going to have his opportunity to do so. You also have Lakeville's Clay Gary, who earned a scholarship last year. I know Matt Simon loves him because he is a very productive slot player in practice. He makes a lot of great catches for them, and he just moves the chains. Is he going to be a guy that steps up? I've talked about, I don't know, I feel like this point especially is so redundant, Luke, but by all of the dang stonks on Douglas Emlyn and Daniel Jackson. I am so sick and tired of saying that. And if, you know, I'm already on the hill. If I die on the hill, I die on the hill. But, you know, that's where I even asked Simon about it. And, you know, I told Gopher Illustrated members this last week, but, you know, he actually just said, yeah, I'd venture to guess they're probably going to play this fall. And I'm just like, yeah, yep, that's probably the right answer. He's like, they're going to play. I just don't know how much yet. So if you have 2 guys that are earning reps as true freshmen, I think that's going to be pretty good. You know, the only other guy I'd really mention here is Michael Brown Stevens, a redshirt freshman, someone that Matt Simon brought up again. Is he ready to make that year 2 jump after redshirting last year? Because I'm very skeptical that Nnamdi Adeyemi, Jameer, Peter Udebach, and Jonathan Mann make this rotation this fall. But I guess my point here with the wide receivers, Luke, is I'm not trying to scare people that, you know, this room has the potential to be very average to above average if Bateman doesn't come back. But let's be realistic about it. Like, you're losing Tyler Johnson to the NFL, one of the most productive receivers in Gopher football history. If you don't get Bateman, I mean, you're asking a bunch of guys to really take three steps up the ladder into roles that maybe they're ready for, maybe they're not. And you don't really have time to really figure that out because, oh, by the way, Michigan is your first opponent. A ranked top 25 opponent is coming to your house, and you don't really have the time to get your legs under you. Because if you do, then you're going to look up at the record, and it's going to be 1-3 because Minnesota's having issues with figuring out who they should be starting at receiver. So there is some ambiguity here, but if Bateman does get that waiver, we're good to go. Because you tell me it's Bateman, Ottman Bell, Emelin Jackson, Seth Green, Clay Geary. I mean, let's go. I mean, That's you're going to be just fine then.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about tight end. You brought up Brevin Spanford earlier. You know, obviously one of my favorite because he comes from the same conference that I played in. You know, Central Lakes Conference. Just saying.
Don't you hold the record at your high school for most consecutive amount of snaps that you actually held correctly for the placeholder? You were the world's best holder in that.
I wasn't even the holder. I was the kicker. You're not even close to right.
You even told me that you have it framed right above your bedroom.
Okay. Tight end. This is a position group, blocked very well, didn't get a lot of that Shiraka pie. You know what happened? We're making a new kind of pie this year.
Mike Sanford has really come out and said tight ends, instead of getting 16 targets the last 2 years, we're hoping to get you 16 targets in 5 games, which again isn't a lot. It's 3 targets a game, only 10% of potentially Tanner Morgan's targets going to that position, but it's a start. Could it be more than that? Certainly. And that starts with Brevin Spanford. People are tired of me talking about it. I know that from my texts. I know that from the GI message board. I know that from my DMs. There's just way too much steam that I hear on any given week and that I've been hearing about Brevin Spanford for now years. And now it's time for Gopher Football behind the scenes people who are telling me this to actually put that plan into action this fall, because Minnesota could really use a guy like Brevin, who is 6'6", 6'7", incredibly athletic, a very good ball winner of 50-50s, someone that is too big for safeties and he's too fast for linebackers. Figure out a way to get him into the game plan and get him 2-3 targets a week and see what he can do. And because if he can, from what I've been told, you know, things are still trending that way, Spanford can be a difference maker for this offense. Now, it's not just Spanford, because there's likely going to be 4 tight ends that are going to play this fall. Second one would be Cole Keefe, who I would probably have as my all-decade blocking tight end for Gopher football. And he is just a – how do I want to describe Cole in terms of as a football player? Because he couldn't be any – you know, he and his folks are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Co is going to bury your face into the ground, tell you about it, and then help you up. So, and Co is now 265, I believe, and he is ready to go in year 5 or year 6 or whatever this is for Co. And if you want to ask him to be your end of line Y, who's going to block 95% of the time, yeah, I'm all game, especially with some ambiguity there at right tackle. And then you're also going to have Jake Paulson in year 4, Bryce Witham, the Outback Bowl hero in year 5. All 4 are going to play. You know, all 4 are going to have the potential to catch some balls, which I know them and their position coach, Clay Patterson, are very, very excited about. Which leads me down another rabbit hole of, so, Luke, I'm going to give the horse before the cart here, or the cart before the horse. How does that saying go?
You don't want to get your cart before the horse, me boy.
All right. Because, I talked to Matt Simon, it'll be coming out on Gopher Illustrated, and I asked him about, because you'll remember that Matt Simon was the one who called the plays in the bowl game, when Minnesota beats Auburn, huge win. And I asked him about Bryce Witham's 2 gigantic plays in that game, where it was the 4th down at the goal line where Seth Green throws him a little pop pass, touchdown. And then you had Tanner Morgan hit him on a wide dump on fourth down in the fourth quarter as well. And that's where, you know, we were talking about it, and he's telling me about, you know, how he – I literally asked him, I go, how do you have the stones late in the fourth quarter? You know you need the first down here to ice it away. And you look at your play card and you think, yep, you know what is going to be – what's going to define my – you know, this bowl game for Minnesota, we're going to go play action wide dump to Bryce Witham with Derek Brown probably going to be right in the grill of Tanner Morgan. He's like, yeah, we like the look, yada, yada, yada. Tanner did a great job. But he goes, you know, if I would have just – he goes, there were going to be two options there. If Bryce and Tanner don't make incredible plays, he's like, I know that all I would have heard from now until the end of time was, wow, you should have ran the ball. It was fourth down. What are you doing throwing the ball at a tight end? And he goes, it's funny those people would have said that, because I went back and I watched the tape, and if I would have just handed it off to Mo Ibrahim, he probably hits his face mask on the goal post, because the way that Auburn had defended that play, and if Minnesota just makes their normal blocks, Mo is untouched 35 yards into the end zone, and it's game blouses. So little tidbit there I thought was very entertaining that, yeah, Bryce, you know, the co-offensive coordinator is a big fan of Bryce, big fan of this position group.
Yeah.
That's why you're going to see them get some more action here in the passing game this fall.
All right. I think this is probably the most intriguing position group, at least of late, mostly because you have the Curtis Dunlap news, Daniel Faalele is coming off of injury. We know how coy this everything is too political these days. This coaching staff is about injuries, etc., and kind of, you know, what's happening in and around the program. They're very coy. They're not going to show their hand, etc. Let's talk some offensive line, Ryan. What can we expect, you know, without a lot of information
here? Boy, you want to talk about ambiguity. Welcome to the king of ambiguity for Minnesota's offense, the offensive line. I don't really know what to kind of say here.
Let's review.
Sure.
Theoretically, this is who we have back, right? So we have
your entire offensive line.
Exactly. Everybody's back.
Schluter, Faalele, Dunlap, John Michael Schmitz, Blaze Andrews, Connor Olson.
Right.
And all five of them, except for JMS, so it is mind-boggling to me that the other five linemen got all Big Ten, either honorable mention or
right.
13. But JMS didn't.
Yeah.
I think JMS. When, again,
just shameless plug for our breakdown episodes, Derek Burns will be joining again. And I think he said that John Michael Schmidt was, in his opinion, if not number one, at least number one or number two on the offensive line, with Schluter kind of neck and neck there.
I think he said, and we'll have to ask him when we get him next month to break down hopefully a Michigan victory. If I remember right, and I've had some concussions in my day, so maybe my memory isn't what it used to be. But I'm pretty sure he essentially said JMS is the best center he's seen. I think it was at least in the Fleck and Jerry Kill era.
All right. So,
but anyways,
I was going to say, we've been saying for a while, it seems probable that John Michael Schmidt's going to start at center. After that, it just seems like just about anything could happen here.
Yeah, because, and that's why I say JMS is going to be starting at center, is I am highly skeptical that both Daniel Faalele and Curtis Dunlap are starting for Minnesota in 26 days. Now, it's not what you want to hear. It's not what I want to report, but I think it's the truth. And so if that's the case, then you insert John Michael Schmitz into the starting lineup. And to me, that's okay, because I think I've said this numerous times as well. I think John Michael Schmitz is an upgraded center over Connor Olson. I think Connor Olson is a better guard than he is a tackle. And we'll see what kind of happens with Faalele coming off injury and some other things behind the scenes there. We'll see what happens with Curtis Dunlap as he attempts to come back and play after putting his name into the portal. I think there's a very real possibility that you're looking at Sam Schluter at left tackle, Connor Olson at left guard, John Michael Schmitz at center, Blaze Andrews at right tackle. And then you'd be looking at some combination of either Curtis Dunlap or the Holy Family native, from hashtag one of us Minnesota in Axel Rushmeyer. Now, like I said, I also think Andrews is a better tackle than Izaguirre. So, you know, this offensive line has the potential to be really damn good. They really do. Because, I mean, if you're continuing with the thought of players continue to get better as time goes across, I mean, Sam Schluter went from an injured liability in 2018 to arguably Minnesota's best offensive lineman in 2019. And if he can take another step up in his play this fall, I mean, we're going to be talking about him potentially going into the draft because he'll have his degrees in year five. What would he have left to potentially prove and not try to go get paid? Then you have Connor Olson. As I mentioned, I think he's a better guard than he is a center. I think just because I think John Michael Schmitz is really good. And this inserts him into the lineup. I think Andrews has obviously the intelligence and the athleticism and the positional flexibility that's going to get him paid someday in the near future in the NFL. And that's where you've seen him play essentially every spot in the offensive line now and start games there except at center. But the ambiguity comes in what do we expect from Dunlap? If he's not there, then you're going to be going to Axel Rushmeyer, and a kid who's worked his tail off from walk-on to scholarship to now potentially starting. But there's no denying that there is going to be certainly a downgrade in athleticism from Curtis Dunlap to Axel Rushmeyer. Now, I just, you know, there's just a lot I don't know what to expect there because I don't know what the five is going to look like. I mean, there's still an outside chance, I'd say a very outside chance, that Paul Ailey and Dunlap are there for the Michigan game. But there's just a lot of moving pieces along this line, and it's tough to get a grasp on it.
I would argue it's tough to get a grasp, too, because you don't actually know if this is a smokescreen or not, right?
Like, well, especially because I'm not there, and they're not going to allow any media personnel there. Like, SEC media got to be at some of the practices and whatnot. I haven't heard of any Big Ten schools opening up, you know, media availability potentially in person. And that's where, again, I think it's feasible. For those of you who don't know where Minnesota's practice field is, it's right next to the baseball stadium. You're telling me I can't go stand up on the rails where KFAN does their radio bits, like when they're doing practice there with Garden Grimm. And I can't go stand there and be way out of the action and have no chance of giving COVID to anybody. like, I can't watch practice then.
Right.
Like, I just, like, to Luke's point, like, no one's really going to know for sure until it's October 24th and Minnesota goes out for their first series.
Right, exactly.
So, and that's where we get into, like, 1 through 6, if Paul Ailey and Dunlap are starting, is for my money, the best offensive line Minnesota's had since the Mason years. And I think that obviously elevates the ceiling and the floor of what this Minnesota offense can be. But if you're going to be without a couple of starters and you're still trying to figure things out, and heaven forbid COVID hits or you have some injury situations, that's where I think depth is thin. Because if, say, left tackle goes down, you're throwing in J.J. Gaudet there, who I know the staff is very high on long-term, but they think he needs another year in the weight room. You'd also potentially be looking at a true freshman at right tackle in Ariante Ursary, who I know has very much impressed since he stepped on campus here in June. And then Minnesota thinks he's got a bright, bright future there. You'd be talking about Austin Beyer at guard, Nathan Bowe at center. It's just the drop-off that would happen from, you know, Schluter to Gaudet or Andrews to Ursary, or John Michael Schmitz to Nathan Bowe. I mean, it's significant, and it could hinder an offense. I mean, you've seen, I'm sure many of the people listening to this are Minnesota Vikings fans. I mean, you saw on the last drive of the game against the Titans are rushing three people, and they're getting to Kirk Cousins in 2.5 seconds. It's because your offensive line is trash. Now, Minnesota's offensive line is good, and I don't want people to think it's trash, but if you have 4 or 5 guys out, I mean, it's going to look significantly, significantly different. So to really kind of sum things up here before we get out, it's there. The ambiguity lies in the ceiling of this offense, because if you have Bateman and your offensive line situation sure up, I mean, yeah, you have the potential to score 30, 35 points a game again. If you don't have Bateman and you have some offensive line woes, I mean, I think we have to then address what's realistic for the ceiling and the floor of this offense, even with Morgan back, even with Mo back, and with the other pieces that Minnesota has. So, you know, we're still here less than 4 weeks away waiting to kind of see how it all plays out. But I think that this is still an offense that is going to be fun to watch for a second straight year, which I don't know when you could say that in back-to-back years in the last 15 years of Gopher football. Like, oh man, this is a fun offense to watch. Well, it certainly has the potential to be, and I really hope that it does, and it probably will. But I'm just saying you have to be able to see all sides of the spectrum here, and we'll have to see how some of these situations play out. But as we kind of get out of here, Luke, I am optimistic. I'm going to leave them with some optimism here. I do think this is an offense that's going to be fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I do think it's an offense that I don't know if they're going to be top two in the Big Ten in scoring again, but I think top five is certainly something that fans should expect if Bateman is back. And it's going to be something to where if it all clicks, I mean, we're going to be talking about potentially some very interesting games down the stretch in December, but we also have a brand new offensive coordinator in Mike Sanford Jr., who got three spring practices and then COVID hit. Now he's got a 5-week accelerated fall camp to try and figure it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that's the one thing that we've kind of overlooked in this entire discussion is, you know, while there's a lot of stability coming back in certain places, the main unknown is still an offensive coordinator. While the offense will be structurally similar, there are going to be some nuanced differences. We've talked about the, you know, Sanford's ability to lean on, or not ability, but willingness to rely on and feature tight ends, for instance, something that was pretty much absent or non-existent in a Kirk Shiroka offense. It'll just be interesting to see how this plays out. I think the thing that makes it all the more interesting is the fact that it is going to be a different offensive coordinator with a lot of known good weapons, assuming things come together. It could be very interesting, but you know, there are potentially lots of places to hide and have excuses as well.
And that's where I think the 2021 offense is going to be a step up from whatever 2020 is, even without Bateman, just because you have another year of experience for Ottman Bell, for Emelin, for Jackson, for Span Ford, for these young running backs to complement Mo. And if your skill position players can take it up a notch, and you also figure out a way to get some continuity for another year on the offensive line, plus Morgan, I mean, you were talking about starting off the season with Ohio State at home. I think that's going to be a heck of a game if Minnesota has some things break right that way. So I think 2021's offense is going to be even better, but I still think 2020's is going to be something that you're going to enjoy watching on Saturdays.
It will be very fun. It'll just be fun to have football, man. Let's just be completely honest. I mean, I don't know about you, but I haven't found the other conferences that are playing all that interesting. I actually didn't get a chance to watch much of the SEC this weekend. But you know, I haven't really paid much attention to the other conferences, and it just doesn't feel as real without fans. I don't know if that's just me but hopefully if it's a team that, you know, I root for year in and year out, and I'm always on the bandwagon, like with the Gophers, if it will be all the more interesting and engaging. Maybe I'm alone in this. Maybe I'm the only one that's not engaged in this. NFL, I would watch like random NFL games before. Dude, I can't even watch random NFL games for some reason. I don't know.
Well, I can because, fantasy football and DFS and all that always makes it a little bit entertaining, but I get you. It's a weird year, but we just got to make the most out of it.
Yeah, I'm just hoping. I think that when the Gophers come back, I'll be all in. I don't think there's any question there. All right. I guess that wraps it up. I guess next week we are going to preview the defense for those that are not Gopher Illustrated members. Mr. Burns, maybe you can highlight who you had interviewed today.
Yeah, we had Joe Rossi, the Minnesota's defensive coordinator. Was able to get him to talk about, you know, his rise from quality control to D-line coach to now defensive coordinator here at Minnesota. How did he change Minnesota's defensive identity in essentially 1 week, from Rob Smith's defense that was big play after big play to shutting down Purdue, who was red hot at the time, and really continuing forward with that. And we'll have an interesting piece out with him tomorrow, where it's going to be, this one's going to be behind the paywall because I need to pay bills. But I mean, he goes on record unprovoked and says one of his linebackers that probably going to be starting for Minnesota this fall has a chance. He has, his expectations for him, I should say, are to be one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten this fall. My eyebrows went up. My eyes were raised when he said it. So a lot of good things coming down the pipe. We got Joe Rossi tomorrow, Matt Simon Wednesday, Thursday, Kenny Burns on Friday. More interviews coming out over the next 2 weeks. So if you want to help support us, head on over to Gopher Illustrated, subscribe. It is just a dollar. You will really help a couple of local guys.
All right. I want to thank you guys all for listening. We appreciate all the support that we're getting. It's very fun, you know, to do this podcast. And week in, week out, we always appreciate the interactions. Many of you respond in GIF form on Twitter. Much appreciated. I don't acknowledge all of them, mostly because I'm too busy laughing to remember to reply. But thank you very much. And if you would rate and review the podcast on whatever aggregator you use, that is always appreciated because that is a good way for people to find us. So again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.